Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, coming up, 9 o'clock, Garfunkel and Oates. Great comedy duo out of L.A. They are all over the place, blowing up Kate Micucci and Ricky Lindholm. They're going to be at the City Winery coming up over the weekend. And they're sort of, you've probably seen their work, and if you haven't, be aware. It's dirty language. But at the same time, it's brilliant. It's hilarious stuff, and both of them have taken that success from doing shows all around the country, and now have successful television careers. So we'll talk with them about their work and their show at City Winery. And coming up at 10 o'clock, we'll evaluate your Chicago memorabilia. What do you want to brag about? What do you got? You know, so many people just call in with such great stuff. You know, it's super fun. I've got the wristband that Walter Payton gave me after a practice at Platteville. I got it up on my...
Yeah, prove it. Run some DNA on that thing. I have Riverview tickets from the day I threw up. I'm going to take your word for it.
Yeah. That is exactly what the segment turns into. Riverview tickets and sweatbands. That's the swap meet coming up at 10 o'clock. Well, my guest tonight at the big table is one of Chicago's greatest voices. Wayne Messmer is well known in this town for his rendition of the national anthem. He routinely sings it at Cubs games, but he's also given his rendition to I can name them all. Hawks, Bulls, Bears, Sox, Wolves. He's currently the senior executive vice president at the Wolves. Messmer is not only a singer, but he's a former PA announcer, motivational speaker, financial planner, and author. His book, The Voice of Victory, A Powerful Story of Courage and Triumph, is an autobiography, and it chronicles the real story of when Messmer was a victim of an armed robbery, shot point blank while sitting in his car. He was shot in the neck, the very same place that Messmer has made his career from. That painful experience could have been the end for the popular announcer and singer. Many probably assumed it to be. But Messmer overcame that adversity and returned to various booths and microphones. And 22 years later, he's on the field at Wrigley singing the national anthem regularly. Was it 32 seasons?
Yeah, I've been there 32 years.
32 years.
32 opening days, too.
32 opening days.
Yeah. I worked with the White Sox for 3 years before that as well.
For you to have that kind of longevity as known to be the guy that they just expect to be there to sing the national anthem, what does that mean to you?
First of all, I know who I'm singing for. It's the guy who's sitting on the bar stool over at 48th and Honore, or up on somewhere on the north side. And they say, you know, now, ladies and gentlemen, Wayne Messmer, National Anthem. Oh, good. At least somebody who can sing it. We'll get that comment. and then you sing it because I know, having been taught by a World War II veteran, what it really means. And you know what America was worth fighting for and the world that they saved. You got to keep that in mind.
You do.
So I'm singing for the guy who couldn't sing, and so I'm his voice. I'm the voice of a mom whose son has just been deployed when they thought he was coming home. I'm singing for the family who had a couple servicemen knock at their door and say their son was not coming home. I take it very seriously.
Is that the kind of thing, are those the thoughts that go through your mind each and every time you sing this song? Is it the kind of motivation? Is there sort of a pep talk for yourself before you get on the field and sing the song?
My pep talk is more vocal and technical, just to make sure that I'm, going to go through it. I've already sung and I'm ready to go. It's an octave and a fifth, which is, it's a broader range than most people have, naturally.
Right. We've seen that with a lot of people trying it. They can't come close, right?
Yeah, they either fall off the bottom end or the top, one or the other, or sometimes both. But what can you say? Somebody says, it's a difficult song to sing. Well, it falls within my range, so fortunately. But I not every single time do I have to give myself the General Patton speech. But it still means the same. Mm-hmm. I've gotten involved with honor flights that are sending guys World War II in Korea over to Washington, D.C. for a day, and go out to Midway at 6 a.m. and sing for them as they're getting on the plane. And I tell you, invariably, as they come by, I shake every hand, and one of them catches my eye, and it's my dad. You know, that's my motivation.
For you, did you know, going back to Sox Park 34 years ago, did you know that about the song? Was it something like, oh, this is a great opportunity. This is a great thing for my career. Over time, this obviously has evolved, this emotional attachment to this song.
Yeah, I kind of say it's funny that I made a career out of singing a song that we all learned in second grade, but Yeah, well, I guess I paid more attention than the kids, rest of the kids in class, because you know it worked out for me. But I knew the very first time I had to sing it was at a Loyola University hockey game out in Franklin Park, and I was doing the PA for guys that I knew on the team, and I was just hanging there, and pressed the button, and it went, whoa! It was a recording of Kate Smith, sounding a little even more robust than usual. And I said, well, we need to do an anthem. I've got a microphone. I'll sing it. Come on. You know, and they didn't know that I was a real singer guy. One of them did. But I just let it go. And that was it.
That's amazing to think that that was the beginning of a career in which you can be. I mean, there's something. I mean, you've been an anthem singer here in Chicago for the Cubs, which is, I mean, arguably in baseball, one of the, you know, when Wrigley Field and a playoff right. game and everybody's watching.
Oh, yeah, it's the primo
it's,
spot.
It's
the
primo.
Biggest stage, yeah.
But, and even at your time you had at the Blackhawks, I mean, we talked about it just before the segment, just the 91 NHL All-Star. I mean, there's so many moments that the anthem has had in sports, and you've been a big part of them.
I was at an art gallery here on Michigan Avenue. And I was with my wife, Kathleen, and we're looking, and there was, oh, look at that event. Wow, look at that. Oh, that game. Oh, the first Bulls game at the United Center. Oh, look at this, the first game of the Bears at New Soldier Field. There were like eight things. I sang every one of these, you know, and it wasn't like, hey, look at me. I said, man, am I a lucky guy.
Are you a fan?
Oh, yeah. I love sports. I truly love baseball, truly passionately love hockey. And those are my sports. So where do I hang out?
Right. Well, I mean, there's so much to talk to you about. I mean, the anthem is just one sliver of the things that you've accomplished in your life. But the anthem is one thing that is I don't know, we even see it today. We saw it with the Olympics where, you know, athletes weren't acting the right way when the anthem was being played. We see it, you know, every time that a celebrity tries to sing it and they butcher it, and the country still has an emotion around this song in a way that it's very honorable. Do you see that? Because I mean, you're at a regular, you know, Tuesday night game where, or a Tuesday day game at the Cubs, where not everybody's standing at attention, where it just may not be as dramatic.
I mean, it's true.
Do you see the country having respect for the song, continue to have respect?
Well, they do, and I mean, I've stared people down as I'm singing. You know,
really?
Take your hat off. Put the phone down, for God's sakes. You know? And I think, for sure, when I was at Wrigley, I was the first guy to say, ladies and gentlemen, to honor America, please rise, and gentlemen, kindly remove your caps. Well, we still do that there. But maybe some people weren't taught. That's part of the problem, too.
And maybe it just doesn't. Maybe it's not being handed down generation to generation, because you probably saw a different kind of respect for the anthem 20 years ago. Than
yeah,
that.
And the boomer generation went through a little bit of a revolt. You know, I mean, the flag burning and the draft card burning and all of that.
Yeah, right.
So it eroded some of Archie Bunker's world.
Let me ask you, you know, and I have to be careful because we're on the Blackhawks flagship here, but, you know, the way that people respond to the anthem at the Blackhawks is very unique. And it's one of the more triumphant, I think, emotional experiences when it comes to a anthem. But, you know, there's been some that say, well, that's not really how you're supposed to honor the song. You're supposed to not scream and yell during the spots, you know, things of that nature. Do you play by the rules? Do you think about the rules of how you're supposed to respond, react, and be during an anthem?
Yes, I do. Because being responsible for the guy who was singing when that first started, all the way back in 1985, it's a big difference now between what like hollering for America. I want to be very careful about how I say this, too. But hollering and cheering for USA a day and a half after the Gulf War had begun.
Right.
As opposed to a Friday night exhibition game when you think what you're supposed to do is scream like you just lost your mind.
Right.
During the anthem. Why are you doing that? That's what we're supposed to do. It's meaningless from that standpoint.
Right.
And I, even during the Blackhawks days, and believe me, what a magnificent feeling, you know, because at the time at the old Chicago Stadium, I'd be standing up on the organ, in the organ loft, and you have everyone who turns and looks at you, and the place just just rocks. And I wanted to just once say, shush, I'm trying to sing here. You know.
Can we stop the song, please?
Yeah, wait, no, wait. I'm pretty good. You know, I mean, if you're trying to drown me out, if I was really bad, right. I could understand it.
Wayne Messmer, my guest tonight at the big table. We'll continue the conversation. His book, The Voice of Victory, A Powerful Story of Courage and Triumph. And also, he also has a CD, Wayne Messmer, with pianist Judy Roberts. So lucky to be loving you. We'll continue the conversation with Wayne Messmer here at the big table. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the big table tonight, Wayne Messmer, the voice of Chicago.
That's what it sounds like when I drive by.
Is it?
Yeah. Boom, 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 boom. No, I really don't have it.
He's the author of the book, The Voice of Victory. He also has a CD, you know, with pianist Judy Roberts. So lucky to be loving you. I mean, I say that you are the voice of Chicago sports. You're the voice of Chicago. You've done so many games, so many memorable moments for Chicago.
Yeah, I've hung around a lot, you know. But Chicago Sting is where I first started professionally.
Really?
Yeah. Hockey came after that, did it? No. What came first? The Sting came first. And then the White Sox happened after that.
Right.
And I did 3 years, which was 82, 83, and 84.
It's good years
and,
to be there.
And the 83 was magnificent, won the division by 20 games.
Yeah.
You know, and I grew up on the south side of Chicago. 84 stunk, and then had an option to, you know, entertain an offer from the Cubs and made that move. It was really a lot about exposure, really, and I don't mean that from a ego standpoint, from a person who wants to try and make a career as a singer, as a personality figure, whatever the heck. The more you're seen, you're seen,
right?
You know,
and it's amazing too because at the time, you know, you or now you've become the voice everybody wants to represent at the sporting events. You know, I mean, you see, I mean, some you've worked for pretty much every single sports organization here. In
yeah,
town.
I know those. Some have come and gone. Right. You know. The Chicago Blitz, I think it was one of those, or the USFL.
Yeah, right, of course.
And I had promised my friend that I'd come out, and it was Soldier Field, and it was sleeting sideways, and I had a horrific sore throat. So I said, well, I promised George I'd come out. So I went out there, and it was miserable.
But, yeah, but you can say you did a Blitz game.
I did, yeah. I know.
All right, so, you know, you're famous as well, like you said, about the 91 All-Star Game at the Chicago Stadium. You did a lot at Chicago Stadium with the Blackhawks, Bulls as well at some point. But, that's where your story and a lot of Voice of Victory is about. It's about your time at Chicago Stadium, especially that night in 1994. It's a story that is a sad story that we all know. Like, everybody in Chicago knows of the robbery that took place, and the gunshot and the
robbery
wound.
Attempt. It's interesting sometimes, and I really don't mean to minimize this at this time in Chicago, but sometimes if people start saying, "Weren't you?" And you know, I say, "Do you want to play Wayne tragedy trivia?" You know, it's like, "Were you stabbed?" No. "Were you this after a such and such?" No. Here's exactly what happened, and you know, you tell it in real time, and it happens so quickly. You know, just walking back to a parked car and, kept my eye on one young fellow walking down the street and I didn't see the other one come up behind me. Bangs on the window. I take off out of my parking spot. Pulls the trigger. You know, at a moment like that, what do you do? You know, you think life, survival. Hit the gas. Drove a block and a half back where I had just come from. Got out of the car. Knocked on the door. Couldn't even make a sound, and waited for the ambulance and the police.
Did you know at the time that where you were shot? Did you know where the pain was coming from?
Amazingly, when you're in that much shock, you don't have a great deal of pain. Now, I've been told by a lot of people who come up to me and suddenly we're in the same fraternity, "Hey, I got shot." You know, you'd rather not be a club member of that group. Right. But if the bullet had hit a bone, I'd have been a different story. But it went through the left side of my neck, whoop, passed through, and it didn't exit. It jammed in the right side of my neck. Again, not because I was superhuman or I was, you know, lifting weights with my neck. It just the way it worked out. Mm-hmm. I was wearing a tie. The tie went into the bullet hole, stopped a lot of the bleeding. You know, certain things happened that when I did get well, my real prayers were not just to be well, but to become better, a better person, do-over, you know?
For you, I mean, you went into surgery after that. I mean, it was a long surgery, 10 hours,
yeah.
You know, and there was a lot of worry.
I remember none of it.
You do?
Yeah.
The medicine, right?
Fortunately, yeah.
Well, I mean.
But I woke up 2.5 days later. 2.5 days.
Wow.
With a couple questions. Like, what did you have to do to keep me alive? I'm hoping that this was a nightmare. And, well, it was, but it turned out to be a real one. And I was hooked up on respirator. I had every imaginable orifice jammed with something going. And it was, I'm thinking, this is not going to be good.
What did you know at that time when you woke up?
I knew that I couldn't move my hands, my fingers, my toes, and I didn't know why. And I was very semi-conscious because it was kind of a morphine holiday that I was on. And I wanted to call somebody over and say, what's the deal? You know, and I knew that the surgery had to be pretty dramatic. I mean, you wake up and you've got a, you know, I'm on an respirator. I've had a tracheotomy where they gashed me ear to ear, the doctors, that is. And, you know, you kind of wonder what did you have to do and what is the aftermath or what is the result of something that you did? I thought, oh, boy, for a day and a half,
yeah,
I lay there thinking that something really went bad in surgery and I was now a quadriplegic. Because I couldn't talk, and I wanted to scream.
Were you aware at that point, you know, I mean, right at that point, waking up in surgery, what you can remember, were you aware of that the wound was in your neck, that was in your voice, that was your esophagus?
I wanted to know what was hurt. The windpipe was what really was torn up. It missed both vocal cords.
Amazing.
By, and I know this plays well on radio, by this much. You know what I mean?
Did you know that at the time? I mean, were you? I guess the question I'm asking is were you concerned that you weren't going to be able to talk again?
Oh, of course.
That you weren't going to be able to sing again?
Oh, yeah.
You thought it was over.
Sprain your ankle. You'll never walk again. Get a cold. You'll never get over it. You know what I mean? It's recovery is extremely slow and at its own pace. When what you do for a living is using the gift of your voice, singing, speaking, voiceover, broadcasting, all of those wonderful things. You can't do it with a voice like that.
Right.
You know? And after several months, that's what it sounded like.
Okay, we'll take a quick break because we want to get to the news and update with Rob Martyr. But, a lot of what your book is about overcoming adversity. And that's something that you do in your motivational speaking, is talking about the transition that you had to make personally, emotionally, mentally, to be able to get, not only get back on your feet, be able to talk again, but for be able to get on stage and just, yeah. I mean, I was just at the game, Wayne. I was at the game last week, a day game, and they're like, ladies and gentlemen, Wayne Messmer. And I'm like, I mean, it's amazing. It's one thing to get back up after a huge tragedy like that, but it's another to get back on the stage.
And that's a remarkable thing.
It's remarkable.
Because I will tell people, don't just walk away after we've spoken. Shake my hand, and not because you should be so happy to meet me, but because you need to touch someone who's been touched by a miracle. To have been given a gift is already amazing. To have it stolen and to get it back all the way, it's insanity. There's a message there. Not why did this happen to me, but why did I get better?
Well, let's talk about that. We'll talk about that after the break here. Wayne Messmer, my guest, on the Big Table. Stay with us. It's Download here on WGN Radio. Thanks, Rob. My guest at the Big Table tonight, Wayne Messmer.
This is not the kids' table. It's the big table, baby.
It's the big table.
Yeah.
His book, The Voice of Victory, which, I mean, this was put out a while back, and it mm-hmm. continues to be reprinted because people, it's not just an autobiography of, you know, the guy who is the great singer and voice of Chicago sports. It's really almost like a book about recovery.
It really is, and it doesn't go through the 12 points or
right,
12 steps
right.
or any of that, but it is recovery nonetheless, and built upon a faith, family, friends, and ultimately forgiveness, which is, that's something that's holding
that's
a lot
big,
of us
that's
back.
A big part of it. You know, I was reading up on your story, and that's always been pulled out, that you forgive the kid. He was a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a
yeah.
14, 15-year-old kid.
Yeah, 15 and a 16-year-old involved, and you've got to move on. I mean, if you're victimized, we've all been downsized or lied to or cheated on or something or other, God help us, shot. You know, and it's not the incident itself, but it's our reaction to it. That's what we're made of. And I just made up my mind. No, you're not taking me out. You
right.
know, if there's a reason I'm alive, then I'm going to find it. And it might just be to be here tonight. To talk to you, who someone hears it, who's thinking, man, you know, I just don't know where to turn.
And, you know, your story, which is motivational, and you're speaking around the country about this, but it wasn't all perfect. You know, you're not saying, oh, I made a choice, I wish you would make a choice and just get up. I mean, you had to go through severe rehabilitation, you know, even looking back a months later and being mm-hmm. like, I'm never going to be able to sing again. So
yeah, I had to reach that point where I had to accept the fact that it wasn't coming back. And that was hard. There were 29 consecutive days where there was a story in the newspaper, one or the other, or all three of the majors of Chicago. And on the 30th day, it became very lonesome. You wanted it to end, but the aftermath didn't end. And you can forgive, but you should not forget. I mean, there's a lot of, I sound like a cliche machine here, but you get what I mean? It's
yeah.
very serious choices that you
no,
have
but you're
to
right.
make.
I mean, everyone is, I can't believe what happened to Wayne Messmer, and then, oh, there's rehabilitation, and oh, is he going to do it? Okay, well, let's move on to something else.
Well, nobody ever said that I would sing again, nor did they ever say I wouldn't.
Right.
But it was a long process, and I was told it'd be a year and a half to 2 years before I knew what my speaking voice would sound like. And I came back 6 months and 5 days later in a first ever Chicago Wolves hockey game out at the then Rosemont Horizon, now the Allstate Arena. Amazing, I'll tell you. It's like walking on water.
Yeah.
It was an Elvis moment.
Were you scared?
Yeah, yeah. I was very frightened that it just wouldn't work.
Like that you'd be halfway through the anthem and something
yeah.
would go wrong? Or
it's tough when you're healthy.
Yeah.
And it's a strenuous song. And to do it when you've got some pieces that are kind of cut and paste and put together. But I was thinking the other day, somebody said to me, how do you continue to sing it at that level? And I said, all of a sudden it dawned on me. I had like Tommy John surgery on my throat. So I'm only 22 years old, baby. Let it rock, you know.
That's a good way to think about it.
That's one way to think about it. I wish I were 22, but not really, you know. But you have to come back. You have to be singularly focused. And hope is a big thing. Hope is kept alive, I believe, through prayer. And, you know, I had a great family surrounding me and tremendous friends. And above all, an unwavering faith.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the three Fs, the faith, family,
yeah.
friends. I mean, do you consider yourself, you've talked a lot about the idea of who you were and almost getting a redo. Did you consider yourself a person of the faith before this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very important. I do a lot of speaking to men's groups. And I've got a big one coming up here in Park Ridge, September 10th. And I will always challenge guys to it's a good idea to have some kind of faith relationship, like when things are going well, so you're not knocking on the door when
mm-hmm.
you know, a wheel just flew off.
Right.
It's like, oh, maybe you can help me. Who are you?
Right.
You know what I mean? Introduce yourself.
What was it about faith, being a faithful person? What was it that helped you come back from this? What was it? I mean, because there's prayer. And there's always going to be sort of like, please God, you know, I hope I can sing it again. But mm-hmm. what was it about faith that helped you get back to the stage?
I think what it was, and I am a Catholic guy and grew up as a Catholic kid and still am a Catholic old guy, but the prayer of the Lord's Prayer was the thing that worked for me. And when the words, thy will be done, whoa, wait a minute. I'm going to try as hard as I can to get better. My wife looked at me and said, we should try to accept nothing less than complete recovery. Have you seen the charts, you know? But I'm going to try to make it happen, because that's what I did. I'm a musician first and everything else second. And once I kind of said, I'll take what I'm left with. First of all, let's celebrate I'm alive. Mm-hmm. Let's celebrate that a day and a half later, my fingers and toes started moving because they had injected me with something to keep me from flipping around. But nobody told me that, you know, so... We learn a lot during these types of things. You learn a lot about the justice system, the legal system, and the vast difference between them.
There's so many things. You can go beyond that. You can say physically how your body reacts to medicine and to the idea of surgery, but also mentally how you deal with the fact that this all played out very public. You're a public mm-hmm. figure. You know, you had to deal with the fact that you were in this state, you know, that you were... You know, you were being written about in newspapers. That's that emotionally. Talk about what it takes to, I don't want to say overcome, but what it takes to go through something like this.
I looked at it from the standpoint of allowing myself to be tremendously humbled by it. That because I think for so many years I had been really the sole guy of doing the anthem, and when it was the cruel irony of being shot in the neck, in the throat injury.
Yeah.
It's like, shoot me in the foot or something, you know, if you have to at all. But I don't know, and I think that's what caught a lot of people's attention, that the song itself had been silenced because I was their torchbearer of the anthem.
My guest tonight, Wayne Messmer. Okay, so we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to get your take. I mean, obviously, this is a huge year for the Chicago Cubs.
Oh.
But it's also, I mean, Chicago. I mean, you have become, like I've said throughout this interview, the voice of Chicago. And you've gone through all of this adversity. And in a weird way, it does feel like because you've been there and you've been down and you've been up and you are Chicago. Like, it's almost a perfect fit to be the guy who comes out and starts the thing that we're cheering for and that we paid money to come see.
It's a great feeling. It's a wonderful feeling, you know. I don't walk around at a ball game, whomever I'm sitting at a game with, I say, what are you going to do? I'm going to walk around and try to get recognized, you know, take pictures, sign a baseball, sign a hockey puck, whatever it is, you know.
I love it.
It's like, be open to the welcoming embraces that are coming your way. You know, and my thing when I sing, I've got a minute and 35 seconds to do it. Create a moment, because quite often the true value of a moment isn't realized until it becomes a memory and you missed it. You could have been, you were there, you know, but you weren't totally in.
Wayne Messmer, my guest at the big table. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest at the big table tonight, Wayne Messmer, the voice of Chicago sports, voice of Chicago. His book is in the third printing, The Voice of Victory. Also his CD, Wayne Messmer, with pianist Judy Roberts, So Lucky to Be Loving You. You know, you're known for the anthem, but you, I mean, you like to sing. You are much more than just one song.
Yeah. First of all, I say I know two because I know the Canadian anthem as well. Although I have sung a bunch of different anthems. French anthem in French, Polish in Polish, Mexican in Spanish, Soviet anthem in Russian. That may be it.
That's a good. That's pretty good list.
Yeah, it was fun.
for you, I mean, singing has become, obviously, is a career for you. It's a career in the sense that, you know, you have carved out a niche in the way that you are the anthem guy in Chicago. But you also do a lot of jazz and other things. You have the show on DCB. You do a lot. I mean, how much of singing is both, I guess, a pleasure as opposed to just a career?
Now, well, for me, anytime I can make music, I'm in. You know, it's like, we're going to do a concert. Great, we'd love to have you do a concert. All patriotic stuff. Okay. You know, I love it. And it's, you mean, believe me, I'm sure that, you know, what's his name, with achy, breaky heart, you know, walks around with that on his back all the time. How does he feel about it? Or Tony Bennett with I Left My Heart in San Francisco.
Right, right.
Except that it bought a mansion overlooking the ocean for him. But I like being
Do you feel that you get pigeonholed as sort of like you're anthem guy and that's all you do?
Yeah. I work with a 16-piece big band, and somebody will come into one of the places where we're playing, what are you going to do, sing the anthem? No. Thanks for asking, you know. Or if I'm doing a jazz thing in a small place with Judy Roberts and Greg Fishman, which I did the other night, and somebody says, hey, sing the anthem. You know, you're not at these rates, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I take it seriously, and I take it in context seriously. You know, it's not like, hey, we're at a bar, and we're slugging down beers. Why don't you sing the anthem? No, I won't. No, not now.
You know, you spent your whole career here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing that and this business, too. I mean, people jump from announcers and singers. They jump from market to market. We see every 5 or 10 years a new announcer or a new singer that comes through. What was it about this town, this city, the sports places here that kept you here?
I don't know. Born and raised, just love it here, you know? I mean, I sit here tonight, and I look up the street, and I see 333 Michigan. I was up on the 34th floor there for 8 years. I see across the street, because we always say, yeah, well, I'm going to go work across the street. Well, it was Stone Container Building. I was there for 5 years, and all doing radio. So there's such a – this is my hometown. You know, I've had opportunities, but why would I leave?
Well, I mean, you've been a part of and you know, put your heart into the Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey, you said hockey and baseball, both of those sports are truly Chicago. You know, at hockey, which is you know, has such a huge following in Canada, of course, but Chicago being one of the original six. I mean, there's something about hockey in Chicago. There's also something about baseball, but. What do you think about being involved in those sports in this town? Do you feel that Chicago is a unique place for both of those kind of sports?
Absolutely. And I, there's no question I'd rather do it for the Chicago Cubs than the Tampa Bay Rays, even though I wish them well, you know, or any other team, really, except maybe the Yankees.
What makes it special? What is it about those? What is it about the water here that makes those teams special?
Well, Wrigley Field and its history. You know, I'm a huge history buff, and when it comes to this city, I've done a couple narrations of the architectural tour and stuff like that. So I love it, you know. But the history of Wrigley Field is just too much to overlook. You know, you just walk on the field and you're standing there, and it's like it's Game 3 of the 32 World Series all over again. And here's Babe Ruth coming up, and they're throwing lemons at him, you know, or the 50 years of the Chicago Bears. Playing football.
Yeah.
And it came to light one day when I was out visiting one of our relatives and kind of distant relatives. And I sang the game and then drove out to Glen Ellen, I believe it was. And I'm sitting there, and one of the nephews comes up and says, Uncle Wayne, would you mind if I got a paper towel and wiped the dirt off of your shoe from Wrigley Field? And I thought...
Oh,
you know, live it up. But then I didn't make fun of the guy. That's hallowed.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I would say that maybe there's something in the idea that history plays a huge role in all of the different sports teams here, more than other markets. And some have a huge history. But there's something about the way that, like you just mentioned about Wrigley Field, or even the Bears, or even the Hawks for that matter, that they're connected to that history.
Yeah, it's great passion. I mean, we're blue-collar guys. I grew up as a blue-collar kid. My dad was a tool and die maker. I was on the south side of Chicago, Kelly High School. you know, a kind of affectionately, these, those, and them neighborhood. You know, and a lot of guys spoke the way I did not want to speak when I grew up. So they were good mentors for me. But I learned so much about from so many of these the immigrants, predominantly the hard-working Polish immigrants who came over. I learned a lot of lessons from them.
You've probably seen a lot of the good and the bad of Chicago sports, but also probably the good and the bad of Chicago sports fans in the sense that you've been in the rooms. You know, what do you think of the Chicago sports fan? You are one, but what do you think of what sort of encapsulates a Chicago sports fan?
Sometimes it's blind passion. You know, it's the expectation that somewhere there's a trap door and you're going to fall through it. I mean, even now we're pinching ourselves with what's going on with the ball club on the north side, and it's just a wonderful emotion. You become part of the team, I think, as a real fan.
For you being, I mean, you've been there for years, so I mean, it's not new. But do you feel can you feel the difference with a season like this? Can you feel a difference at Wrigley Field?
Yeah, I felt it last year in spring training, and from the very first day, and we're out there, and I turn to Kathleen, and I say, "This is different. This is not what we're used to." And a lot of it was Joe Madden, who's a tremendous, you know, Jack Kerouac guy. You know, he's out there.
All right. So last question. I mean, this is one that I've got curse written all over it. But I mean, you're in a position where you are singing the national anthem, and there's a chance, a good chance, and we'll just go by percentages the way that sports works and put everything else to the side, that the league-leading Chicago Cubs will be in the World Series. For you to be able to sing the national anthem in a situation like that with all the history and everything tied up in that, what would that mean to you?
It would mean a great deal to me. Whether it will happen, I don't know. Quite honestly, it goes into the hands of the network.
Right.
So,
really? So the network would...
Yeah, so I better...
They would not...
I better come up with a quick hit show on the Fox network. So I'm thinking of doing a reality show called I Sing or Else.
So you mean like they'll be like the cast of Empire sings the national anthem. You'd be replaced by...
Hold your breath.
Ah, you know, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Did they do that in the playoffs last year?
World Series, yeah.
But the playoffs for the Cubs, you still were singing national anthems, but...
Sure, with the camera right on me and the microphone didn't work.
But the right, that's right.
Hello.
But the World Series, there's a chance that they would make it more of a celebrity type thing. That ain't gonna happen. I'm gonna tell you right now, Wayne, it's not gonna happen.
Chicago's not gonna happen. We have to get there. We gotta get there.
Well,
first.
If it's not this year, it's next year or the year before. I mean, until all the contracts expire, right?
Wait till next year. We heard that too way too long.
Wayne, it was a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for coming in. We
appreciate
it.
The book, sit with you.
The Voice of Victory, also the CD, Wayne Messmer with pianist Judy Roberts, So Lucky to Be Loving You. Thanks for sharing your story, and great to meet you, and thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
All right. How about that, huh, guys?
Great. Very cool. Very inspirational.
Cool? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, such a tremendous... I mean, he does that. He tells that story. And you know, it's amazing to me, too, that has to be part of his story. And he's got to tell that story. And, you know, he goes around, and like you said, he's speaking to a men's group coming up here in Park Ridge in September. But he's got to continually tell his story about, you know, essentially, you know, something that was just so tragic. Mm-hmm. But how he persevered, how he overcame.
Yeah. Yeah.
He also said he loves you. He did. He says he listens. He loves you.
Well, the feeling is mutual. It's a man crush thing.
There you go.
Yeah. Poor Wayne's like, great. I've created a monster.